I believe an interesting topic to explore here is how is it that we can bring the mind to silence without fighting the mind? How is it that we can find some inner peace without the process of finding inner peace being one of struggle, struggling with ourselves? And I think plenty of people, myself at times and others, practice meditation, at times feel it is a struggle. It's kind of there's different competing forces within us, forces of distraction, for example. And so we're kind of struggling very much against those forces of distraction. Oh, I have to get concentrated. And sometimes we bear down, we kind of steel ourselves up, you know, and kind of, okay, I've got to really do this. And the mind has another agenda. And so, you know, it feels very difficult at times. Or there's overwhelming feelings and strong emotions that might come up. And so it can feel like the rodeo, and somehow it's a feeling of internal struggle to be with them or to deal with them or to try to avoid with them or put them aside or ignore them. Or it's all kinds of ways in which we relate to them. Or some people learn a technique of meditation. And learning a technique, it can be any technique. It can be as simple as counting the breath or saying the metta phrases, doing loving-kindness meditation. But you learn a technique, and somehow the technique doesn't resonate with where we're actually at the moment. And so there's a struggle then with ourselves. I'm supposed to, I should, I need to follow my breath and count my breath. And there's such a strong other momentum going on in our lives that it's almost become a kind of violent act to try to redirect the mind on the breath when there's a whole other thing going on. So how can we bring the mind to peace? How can we bring the mind to silence without fighting with the mind, without having an antagonistic relationship with ourselves in the process? And so then the first thing I'd like to do is ask you, when have you noticed that your mind comes to silence, comes to a state of stillness, or if that those words don't work for you, maybe a state of peace? When does your heart become peaceful or silent or still in a healthy way? When does it happen in your life? Someone like to say yes? When you stop trying. Okay, giving up. Thank you. Yes. So your external behavior is aligned in harmony with kind of your core, who you think you really are. Mm-hmm. Yes?
For me, it's brief intervals between chaos. I mean, between whatever. So that briefness can be... By learning that, that's very good for me because I know that these things will happen. And so they can be very, very short, milliseconds, you know, like a second. Or they can be 5, 10 minutes or something. But they're not permanent.
So there's moments of stillness or peace in the midst of the chaos. And when does that arise? Is it just accidental or by chance? Or are there certain conditions that...
I think it's certain conditions in... if I'm very agitated and just accepting that agitation and where it is. And then for a very brief moment, I can feel this mm-hmm. calmness, and then my mind becomes agitated.
So if Ken can accept his agitation, that acceptance is a condition for at least momentarily having a sense of peace or calm before the agitation might come back. Or yes.
When I don't feel burdened with things I have to do.
So when I don't feel burdened by things I have to do, good, yeah.
For me, it's very often at dawn. The sun's coming up, the fog is clearing, and I'm sort of, again, there's nothing I have to do. It's all being done. The world is just doing what it's doing, and I don't have to make it happen. I can just rejoice in it. It's wonderful.
Uh-huh. So dawn is dawn is a time for Dan to not feel like anything has to be done, and just as a process of just nature kind of unfolding, and he can just relax and be at peace. Yes?
I do the dawn thing, too. Also,
I try to notice what the thoughts are that are running. And sometimes they're about, I don't like him, I don't like her. And I just stop it and I automatically tune into opening my heart. That's it. Just to stop the running thoughts. And if it's fear, I try to recognize what the fear is. I've been very careful to try to notice what the running thoughts are and try to see what I can do to soothe it or something, to calm it down.
Great, that's lovely. A lot of people are at war, meditators, a lot of meditators at times can be at war with their thoughts. And that's certainly going in the opposite direction of being at peace or being still. You hear the instructions, oh, it's good to have a stillness of mind or silence of mind. These thoughts are so agitating and they're so noisy. So then we're at war with our thoughts. And we think, oh, these thoughts are the problem and I need to stop them and push them away. Sometimes it's easy just to quiet them and open to the heart. Or just open to the heart sometimes. But sometimes also people struggle so much. Yeah.
When I'm feeling particularly open-hearted, I notice it especially when I'm enjoying children.
So being open-hearted, especially when enjoying children. Yes?
For me, it's accepting where I am and what is going on.
Accepting who you are and what's going on.
Yeah.
I read recently someone had studied the discourses of the Buddha, who was a meditator in Sri Lanka and done many years of meditation and then had also done some serious study of the suttas and see what the Buddha had to say about meditation. And I don't know if it's, you know, whether his observations are accurate or not, but at least the idea, the principle behind it is interesting. He wanted to say that that in studying the discourses, he couldn't find the Buddha instructing people in a technique of meditation. So the example he gave was in loving-kindness meditation. We have these techniques. We have techniques nowadays of, for example, using the phrases of loving-kindness, first directing towards a self, and then a benefactor, friend, a neutral person, enemy, and all this. It's a kind of a technique, you know, a sequence of things of doing it. But you can't find that instructions in the teachings of the Buddha. All you find the Buddha saying is, radiate with loving kindness. Radiate outwards to all beings with loving kindness. Be in a state, have a state of open-hearted warmth towards the world around you. But he didn't have a technique and a sequence, a way of doing it. It was just like you either did it or you didn't do it. And this person, you know, used that as an example how the Buddha didn't teach a technique. But later in the tradition, in the Buddhist tradition, techniques arose. And you don't find any reference to the Buddha teaching counting the breath. So that's a, you know, very time-honored Buddhist tradition that arose in time. And the Buddha said simply, just, you know, be with your breath, observe your breath, let the breath calm you. And this particular author was not being critical of techniques. And he said he actually loves some of them. He actually has his own technique that he practices for himself. But he wanted to point out the difference between the Buddha wasn't particularly teaching a technique, and maybe it's not necessary to do a technique in order to be at peace with oneself or to find that. Maybe there are other ways. And I've noticed that I actually feel very sad when I hear people talk about vipassana meditation as a technique. You know, what technique of meditation do you do? Well, I do mindfulness and vipassana. It can be technique-oriented. There are ways in which it's a technique. But I understand vipassana as being not a technique at all, but rather the opening of the awareness to what's actually going on. And a technique, in my mind, even though it can be helpful at times, it can also get in the way. Because you put a technique between you and your experience. You have this thing you're going to do for a purpose. Techniques, in my mind, implies you're doing something for a purpose beyond this very moment right now. You're going to get calm, so you have a technique to get calm, and calmness will happen in a few moments, or a few minutes, or a few hours, or a few years, if you do this technique. But that you're kind of a little bit, part of you is kind of leaning forward into the future, to the results of the technique. And its purity, I think, of mindfulness is simply, it's not even a Buddhist practice. It's simply having your awareness unencumbered or unhindered to really be open to what's happening in the present moment in a full, rounded way. Techniques can lend themselves, for some people, to a lot of huffing and puffing, a lot of struggle. They try to impose a technique on themselves. It gets a little bit worse when they have some idea of specifically what the technique is supposed to make happen. And then they're trying very much to make that happen or measuring themselves because it's not happening. And there's often kind of an internal struggle against the shoulds they feel of what should happen in meditation, what should happen for a spiritual person, and what's actually happening for them as an individual. And sometimes techniques are really beautiful, and sometimes they get in the way. So the question I have, I'm posing for all of you to reflect on, is how can you bring your mind to silence? How can you bring your mind to stillness, to peace, without fighting with yourself, without fighting with your own mind and your own heart? Is there a way of doing that? One of the first things that came to mind for me thinking about this is the quality of interest. That you have interest in what's happening in the present moment is one of the things that brings my mind to a kind of silence and stillness. And, rapt attention, absorbed interest. You know, you're really, really interested, so interested in what's happening that there's a kind of loss of self even at times, kind of enter into kind of very silent realm, just kind of a very alert, very curious what this is. And part of what this implies is an interest in the process of what's happening in the present moment. Not just the content or instead of the content. What's happening here process-wise in the present moment? So, for example, if you're troubled by something that happened in the past and you're reviewing the past, concerned about the past, a lot of thoughts about it, you could have the idea, oh, I shouldn't be doing that. I'm supposed to be in the present moment. And then you can be a struggle between this tremendous momentum to think about the past and this, your idea of what the present moment should look like. Rather, I think what you can do, there can be an interest in what is this process in the present moment of thinking about the past. And be really curious, what is this? Don't push it away. Don't feel like it's wrong to think about the past. But to be fascinated, what is it to be a human being at this moment who's thinking about the past? Right now, there are 6 billion people in the world. And, you know, here is one human being, and this human being happens to be thinking about the past. What is this process like? What is it to be in the present moment thinking about the past? And to have this curiosity about that, and to look at it, and explore it, and feel it, and sense it. So it's a little bit different than kind of indulging and keeping the thinking about the past. But I think of it as almost like opening up the awareness to be wider than the narrow constriction about thinking about the past. Not rejecting that or pushing away or fighting it, but opening it up and saying, what else is going on here? What else is happening here? What is this like in the present moment to be aware of thinking about the past? So be curious about the process of the experience in the present moment. To be curious, to be interested in what is it to be alive right now? I think it's a very open-ended question, at least for me. What is it to be alive at this present moment? There's a way in which thinking about the past, thinking about the future, being involved in fantasy, being involved in desires, being involved in hates and aversions, fears, can very easily take us out of the sense of immediate aliveness, the preciousness of really being alive. And a lot of people live somewhat dead lives. What is it to be really alive? Have you ever asked yourself that question? And the beauty of the question is that it can be only answered in the present moment. Because are you alive anywhere else? You know, you might think, oh, yesterday I was alive when, you know. Oh, yes, you know, yesterday I was alive. But, you know, yesterday is just a memory. So if you're really going to connect with what it's like to be alive, it can only be in the present moment. And is that precious for you? Is that valuable? Is it a value? Just the very thing of being alive. And I find sometimes in exploring that and being interested in that, it kind of changes my priorities. What is it to be alive right now? It takes me out of my concerns about what's happening to just the isness, the beingness of the present moment itself. And I know for me, and I trust for a good number of you, that it's very easy to live in a mind that's all aboutness. We're thinking about something. past, future, fantasy, desires. We're thinking about something as opposed to feeling being connected to what it's like to be alive in and of itself, independent of something that's a little bit beyond the present moment of aliveness. What is it to be alive? The little exercise of when you're dead, what's the difference between a corpse and a living person? You know, what will be the difference between your corpse, which you'll have someday, and your body, experience of your body right now? The sensations you have of your body right now, no matter how unpleasant they might be, only can exist because you're alive, you're conscious. When you're dead, those won't be there. So is there some quality of vitality, of aliveness, which is quite precious? I don't know. But the question, what is it to be alive? Is it kind of, it can bring interest, which sometimes for me, it can help still the mind, quiet the mind, and the inner conflicts and tensions. Another question which is interesting, I believe, has been for me, is the question, what is it to be aware? What is it to be aware? And that's another beautiful question in that, where do you find awareness? Now you can try to answer the question by reading a book on psychology, you know, and find all the kind of definitions of what awareness is and consciousness is, and it's not going to, you know, for a meditator, that's not very interesting, what the book says. What's interesting is what is your lived experience of awareness? How do you experience awareness? So, you know, right now, I trust that most of you are aware. What is that? Ask yourself, look, pay attention to yourself at this moment. What is it for you right now to be aware? What is it? What is awareness like at this moment for you? What is it like for you to be interested in that, to explore, to feel it, to sense it? What is it like to be aware right now? What is awareness for you right now? Is there some quality of awareness in this moment, which is silent, which is still, or spacious, or peaceful, or vital, or alert, satisfying? Is there, or is awareness a drag? What is it? What is awareness for you? What is it to be aware? The things you're aware of might be a drag. But can you distinguish, separate out the things you're aware of from awareness itself? If you're perplexed by this question, that's something you're aware of. What is the awareness like that's perplexed? For me, that can help me bring my mind to a kind of silence or stillness or peace without fighting anything. Another thing that's very interesting to be curious about in meditation is what happens to my experience when I'm aware? How does awareness change my experience over time? What is the process that I'm involved in when I meditate? When I sit down to meditate, it isn't only the present moment that we're interested in, even though we put a lot of emphasis on it. But in being present for the present moment, how does our experience change over time? So you're sitting and meditating, and you could feel yourself getting calmer over time. Or you feel a tension draining from your body. You find maybe the mind getting concentrated. Or you find yourself getting more tense over time as you meditate. Or you feel the contractions of your body. Or you feel all kinds of various things change over time. One of the things that helps silence the mind is be curious and interested is to track those changes over time. What is this? So it puts you in the present moment again, because you have to be very present to see that. But as you're tracking it, what's happening? What is this process of meditation like for you? To be interested. Anything that helps put you in the present moment, I think helps with the process of stilling and silencing the mind. Another aspect of that helps can help silence the mind or still the mind, bring peace, is a sense of playfulness in meditation. So again, it's not to burden your meditation with all these shoulds and techniques and, you know, kind of, I got to sit down, I got to kind of bear down on my breath, I'm supposed to do it this way. I've heard this wonderful instruction from some teacher named Gill, and this is the way I'm supposed to do it. And this must be the right way. He seems to know what he's talking about. Forget that. There can be it could be helpful for people who are beginning in meditation to have some particular instructions to get some bearing. But sooner or later, it can be very nice to be playful in meditation, and to have a kind of playfulness and kind of playful exploration to enjoy yourself. So don't have some. I meet plenty of people who have very narrow idea of what they're supposed to do in meditation, and feel like there's a moral personal flaw when they're not doing it the right way. And people, you know, some people really want to do it the right way. They only feel like they don't feel very comfortable about themselves unless they figured out what the right thing is, the right way. Relax any idea of the right way and just be playful. Imagine you're you're on the playground. In Shingon Buddhism, Tantric Buddhism, they actually use the expression playground. It probably has different meanings than the modern word playground, but they use the word playground, as a domain of a Buddha. You know, there's a playground which you practice in. But the idea of being playful, what is it like to play with your breath, to play with your awareness, to let your awareness wander around your body, explore different parts of your body, different parts of your mind, in a playful way. So one example of a playful way for me has been to let my awareness be very relaxed and let my awareness be led by what reveals itself. So I'm sitting here and out of the blue, I'm sitting here minding my own business and suddenly there is a feeling of pressure and hardness and a little bit of pain in my butt. Wow. What's that? So let the awareness sink there. And just kind of, and then let's see where the awareness is going to flow to next on its own. And pretty soon there's a sound. Oh, that's feeling awareness. I wonder what's going to come to awareness next. And this kind of playful feeling, kind of playful kind of discovery. What is going to happen next? What's going to happen next? What's the next thing that's going to happen? Or there can be a playful way of exploring the breathing. To kind of be creative. Maybe adjust the breath a little bit. Maybe, kind of explore the different areas of the body that are affected by the breathing. There can be a playful approach to the mind. What happens in the mind if you try to look in the spaces between your thoughts? What happens in your mind if you try to, find out what does it really feel like to be sad in a playful way? What is this like? Curiosity. Kind of play around. Another way of saying this perhaps is to enjoy yourself in meditation. When you sit down to meditate, what would it take to enjoy yourself? To enjoy the process of being still, not moving the body. To ride the pleasant. What's pleasant in your experience? One playful way is just to kind of hang out with the pleasant. Explore the pleasant. Another playful thing is to explore the unpleasant. Be playful about it. Be light about it. Don't take it so seriously. If you take your meditation really seriously, then it can be kind of a heavy weight on the mind and the heart, and it's harder for the mind to come into silence. So meditation can be the most important thing you do in your life. It can be very, very important. But don't take it very seriously. And once many years ago, 20 years ago, I said to my teacher, maybe this will be heard wrong, but I said, now I say it in my own mind, I wonder myself. I don't take anything that seriously. But I'm most serious about my practice, about my spiritual practice. So some feeling of being, devoted and dedicated, but being kind of light about it also at the same time. Not to be grim or more. Another thing that can bring the mind to silence, which was mentioned here, a number of you, is the quality of acceptance. To accept what's happening in the present moment as opposed to fighting what's happening in the present moment or struggling to make something else happen. To just be very accepting, oh, this is what's happening right now. The very quality of acceptance at times can lead to a quieting, a stilling of the mind and the heart. Occasionally, acceptance can lead to complacency and to laziness or to sleepiness and tiredness and puts the mind to sleep. But there's a healthy way of relaxing. Relaxing overall. Relaxing the body overall, the system overall. And then relaxing into what's happening. So if there's physical pain or some discomfort, emotional discomfort or physical discomfort, accepting it in a certain way and then relaxing into it. Kind of easing into it, because often the automatic tendency is to contract around it or retract from it. And it's a little bit counterintuitive to relax into a difficulty. But I find over and over again that relaxing into it, leaning into parts of the difficult, is often what helps me the most in my life. Brings a greater sense of ease, of acceptance, and not being struggling against something. Another thing, which I've kind of mentioned already, that helps bring stillness to the mind without fighting the mind, is to notice very well all those voices of shoulds and must, all the expectation and demands we have of what's supposed to happen, and learn how to let go of those, to let go of this tendency to should. I should be doing this. Now, it's a little bit tricky to say that, because then you'll say, well, I should be meditating, but I've been told let go of should, so now I won't meditate. And it might be healthy to let go of that if it's some kind of burden, to even the idea to meditate. But part of the art is, you know, again, is to, if you do meditation practice, is to do the meditation practice seriously and engaged in it well, bringing your sincere best effort to the process. But in the process of doing that, letting go of any shoulds, letting go of any burden of expectations and demands, and perhaps letting go of everything except for the alertness of the mind. The alertness of the mind is another one of these qualities which I think is phenomenally precious. And for me, when it's most poignant, most present, this alertness of mind, that alertness is very still. Very still, very vibrant and alive. And the body, my body can feel very relaxed at times. My mind can feel very relaxed. And there's this kind of fire, vibrancy of alertness that can feel very, very still. The analogy I love is that of a candle flame. And a candle flame is very active and alive, not alive, I guess, but very, very vital, very dynamic. But if there's no wind or breeze causing it to flicker, the candle flame is completely still, just going straight up. So when there's no agitation in the mind, the alertness of the mind can be very dynamic and also at the same time very still. Another quality that can help bring stillness to the mind is trust and faith. And one of the qualities that is most important for me is trusting the process of what happens when I'm being mindful. So if I can trust that, if I can trust whatever the experience is, then I'm not fighting it or struggling against it. If I can trust the process of how things will unfold, then it doesn't matter to me which direction it unfolds. Because the spiritual life is not a linear process from worse to better, which we would like, right? But actually, it's kind of goes up and down and around and upside down and all kinds of different directions. It might be from a certain vantage point, very linear from worse to better. But from the psyche's point of view, it doesn't look like that. And, you know, you get calm, and because you've gotten calm, it gives you the stability to notice your fears. And suddenly you notice these fears you didn't even know you had, and suddenly you get really agitated. Sounds like it can seem like you're going backwards. You know, I was so much better off before I meditated, because now, and now I'm, you know, I know I'm so afraid. But it is making progress. It's just that you're opening up to something which is difficult. But if you can trust the process of what happens to you, just it's kind of dumb trust, perhaps, because you don't really, you can't, trusting means you don't really know where it's going to go. But you have enough experience in practice over time that you've learned over and over again that if you can really be present for what's happening, bring mindfulness and awareness and acceptance of it, that things seem to unfold for the better. And with time, we can learn to really trust that, so that no matter what happens, it feels like things are trustable. And part of the reason I think we can trust this process of paying attention is when you're paying careful attention, when you're being really aware, awareness by itself is not judging or criticizing or manipulating or condemning or resisting anything. So all the sufferings that can come from judging and criticizing and resisting and manipulating our experience is not happening in that part of the psyche which is aware. And as that part of our psyche becomes bigger and bigger, we let it become more and more part of who we are, we're simply learning to get out of our own way. We're not going to add any more suffering to that experience. And so we can trust the process of awareness because we know we're not perpetuating the cycles of suffering when we're being aware. That make sense? So to trust the process is very, very important. And sometimes when things get difficult, the mind can still hold that in some kind of peaceful stillness because of the trust that this process is healthy. And finally, it can be very helpful to trust the silence or the stillness. To trust the stillness of the mind, the silence of the mind. Or perhaps even call it of the mind is too much. To trust the silence and the stillness which is here. Our minds are often, again, caught up in about things. The content of the mind, the thoughts, the ideas, the feelings. And we're sometimes blinded to the wider context of what's happening in the present moment. So, for example, if you come in here, I came in here today to sit, and my usual cushion was not on my seat here. And, you know, I said, great, you know, I didn't mind. I thought this would be nice. I haven't sat in the crescent moon pillow for a long time, so I was kind of happy with that. But I could imagine kind of, oh my God, my pillow. And where is it? And, you know, and it's been exchanged with a little, you know, pillow is not as good. And I can kind of be so obsessed with this pillow and looking around for my pillow. And I couldn't notice that, you know, how still. I came in late. You're all sitting already, right? And so I would tune into the fact that there's all this stillness here already, spacious quality and stillness in the room. And, you know, because my pillow. But it doesn't take much, right, to just kind of open the awareness up, be a little wider, and realize there's all the stillness here, which changes very quickly the context of the pillow, you know, the importance of the pillow. I could still wonder, where's that pillow? Which I did. I wondered, where's that pillow? but you know, it was just like this thought floating in my mind. And you know, I was very appreciative of coming in here and feeling what it was like to have a room full of people meditating. So, to appreciate the stillness and the silence which is actually always here. Always. There's always a stillness. And that stillness, at least for me, I would hope it's true for some of you or you'll find this true. This stillness here is vibrant. It's deeply satisfying. It's very precious. And it's so sad that we spend so much of our life caught up in the things of the world as the only reality, the pillows of the world, and never at least include in the context, the stillness, the precious, satisfying stillness, aliveness, which is also here. And to go through our life, walking, shopping, cleaning, talking, working, walking through with some contact, some reminder, some of the stillness and silence is always here. And the stillness and the silence that's always here is not of the personality, has nothing to do with your personal biography and what happened to you in your life, nothing to do with your wants and your desires, nothing to do with your identity and sense of self. Nothing to do whether other people love you or not. Nothing to do with whether how other people treat you. It has nothing to do with your health. Nothing to do with whether you're in the process of dying or not. It's this wonderful thing that's always here. So easy to lose touch with. And so precious when we can feel it in its fullness. So I hope this talk today encourages you to explore how you can bring your mind to silence, to stillness, without fighting yourself.